Hey, I'm Brad, and I'm playing bingo at the Corner Bar in Bucktown, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
I love it. Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. I am Mike Steven. It's great to have you along. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine, show number 884. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So good morning to Bob and to you. Thanks for listening to the show. Coming up on the show today, we will get an update on how local taverns are faring these days. The tavern is important. It's a community meeting place very similar to our libraries. Granted, you can't get a shot and a beer at your local library, right? Well, anyway, libraries are under fire these days, and it's ridiculous. According to the American Library Association, this year, between January 1st and August 31st, there have been 695 attempts to censor library materials and services and documented challenges to 1,915 unique titles. This is not good news. Look, if you're afraid of what your kids are reading in a library, then maybe build in conversations about some of this stuff at home. Also, I guarantee you that the cell phone you bought for your kid is absolutely disseminating some crazy information that you're going to find objectionable. Libraries are having a tough go right now. And as it turns out, so are the little free libraries in Chicago. Or do you call them public bookcases? In any event, maybe you've seen these freestanding structures that look like large birdhouses, but instead of a family of winged creatures inside, there are a variety of books. Usually there's a sign there that says, take a book, leave a book. It's a pretty great system to encourage literacy and the exchange of ideas. Recently, Alderman Ray Lopez introduced an amendment to Section 10-28 of the Chicago Municipal Code. He wants to eliminate these little free libraries from popping up on the public way. The proposal reads, quote, only educational institutions, daycare centers, public and private libraries, not-for-profit organizations, community organizations and religious societies, associations, organizations, or institutions are eligible for public way use permits for public bookcases. End quote. Come on, really? This is what we're going to focus on now? Going down this road could result in the removal of hundreds of these little libraries. In a time when we need to encourage literacy, stand firmly behind libraries of all stripes, and try to build community, this is what we're going to do? We can do better. So show your support for these libraries. Let your alderperson know that you support them. Come to think of it, if these little free libraries are getting removed, maybe we could put them in some local bars and taverns. A shot, a beer, and a book. For those who are of age, of course. In addition to getting an update on our local community hubs, our taverns this week, we also will learn about the great work of the oldest continuously run food pantry in Chicago, and we will hear some new music from local singer-songwriter Ron Lazzaretti. So stick around, a shot, a beer, and a book. I think we're on to something. Over the years on this program, I have extolled the virtues of the neighborhood tavern. This is a place where people from all walks of life can come together on the same social level, and that social level is the height of a bar stool. In addition to the neighborhood tavern as a community gathering place, it's also a local business. So how are these gathering places and local businesses doing? Well, with us for an update on this is the one and only Mr. Chicago Bars. He is the owner of the At Chicago Bars Twitter handle, or whatever Twitter was. It's X now, the artist formerly known as Twitter. He is here with us once again here on Outside the Loop. Mr. Chicago Bars, always a pleasure. How are you, sir?
Good. But it's good to be with you again, always on this topic, but anytime, and happy to help. And it's not just on whatever Twitter is called now. It's also on Blue Sky now. God help us all with a second app.
You're ahead of me, man. I don't even know what that is. But you know what? I'm going to find out after we're done here. So, okay, we keep you somewhat anonymous because you have a lot of ties to what's going on locally, and you have a lot of insight. You know a lot of people, so that's why you're at Mr. Chicago Bars here. So let's just understand some history here. So at one time in the 1960s-ish, around there, Chicago had about 3,000 taverns, but today, in September of 2023, that number has significantly declined. Can you bring us up to speed where we are at today?
Oh, it's awful. In January, I've got it right in front of me because I keep super fun spreadsheets. In January 2018, we had about 950 tavern licenses in the city. By fall, early this fall, I guess late this summer, we had about 822. I just checked before jumping on the phone with you. Right now, there's about 790 active tavern licenses. I think part of that may just be delays in their licenses getting mailed out and showing up in the city data. But regardless, it's well over 10% utterly vaporized in less than 5 years.
So, okay, you and I have talked about how the pandemic has obviously had an impact on business, and specifically the hospitality business across the United States, but locally. So when we look at why that's happening, is it because of the pandemic, or are there other factors at play as well?
Coming out, the taverns are tough to get in Chicago because of zoning restrictions, and aldermen have a great deal of sway in whether they're allowed in their wards in specific areas or not. And that's going back to the beginning of Daley. So they're hard to open, and it's much easier if you can get yourself a line cook and a deep fryer to open a restaurant with a liquor license, as long as your kitchen's going to be open all the time. So they've seen a little bit of growth, about 5% in the last 3-4 years, even with the pandemic. Part of that, and the reason this wasn't worse, was also the last major federal COVID assistance program, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, didn't help everyone who needed help and had a small bar or restaurant, but it helped enough people in Chicago that, honestly, the winners who got those grants were buying places from people who did not and have decided to retire or didn't want to dig out of that hole. Otherwise, the carnage would be worse.
And, you know, we've talked about this before, but I think it's worth reiterating that these neighborhood spots. And so when I'm talking about a neighborhood spot, think about, like, you've got a house on a residential street, another house, and then maybe a bar, a little tavern, and then a house and a church and things like that. So these places that are sort of tucked in to the fabric of Chicago, once these places close down, they're basically not coming back, right?
Yeah, nothing on a residential street. Once it closes down, it's gone. If they don't sell, I think they've got, it depends which liquor lawyer you ask, but they've got a year or two for a new ownership to come in and take over. But once that license generally is dead, not renewed, it's over. And that's a function of the city zoning code back in under Daley that removed zoning for taverns and residential light business districts, and moved mostly to, essentially, they have to be in arterial streets, or the densest neighborhoods are the only places where they're zoned now.
So we see that under Richard M. Daley the second, where these zoning changes happen. And really, I mean, it goes back to, we're thinking about neighborhoods, and back, you know, 20 years ago or whatever it was, the idea was, well, if we get rid of some of these neighborhood establishments, maybe we can clean up some of the neighborhoods and get positive attributes there in these neighborhoods. And again, like, these are local businesses, right? These are part of the community, these places. And I would argue that the fabric of Chicago a little bit has been unraveled. Do you see it the same way?
Oh, sure. There's just fewer gathering places. Like, yeah, I watch all the city council zoning hearings and their license committee hearings. And more often than not, the cry from the elected officials is, how do I get businesses like this in my ward? Honestly, it's the moratoriums on new licenses and the zoning just make it hard. Even I will not even get on my soapbox about regulation and higher taxes in the suburbs do their part. But for example, like Roseland, there was also a young Mayor Daley too. And Reverend Meeks down in that area put together a citizen campaign to clean up the neighborhood by voting out dozens of primarily African-American owned taverns in that Roseland on the far south side community. It did not turn that neighborhood around. And the real most, well, I'm a fan of irony, is the tavern line licenses that remain are clustered in the most affluent, fastest growing property value neighborhoods in the city.
Mm-hmm.
River North up through Roscoe Village along the Brown Line and the Red Line. Partly a function of density, but it definitely hasn't, the existence of that many taverns in those areas certainly hasn't hurt the neighborhoods. It's just kind of an outmotive way of thinking that closed a lot of places.
Right. And that, you know, it's interesting that you say that, this way of thinking about a neighborhood, a community, and what spots are important, and how a community is sort of bound together. So you talk to a good amount of tavern owners, and what are they saying? What's the vibe? I mean, what is it, one of despair, of not so much optimism? But I mean, there are still taverns around in Chicago. What are these tavern owners saying these days?
One of them hilariously said to me, "This is the life we choose," which I think came from an old mobster movie or maybe Sopranos. If you made it this far through the pandemic, through being shut down for most of over a year to inside service, to having to fight so hard to get outdoor seating for taverns in the year of our Lord 2020, during a global pandemic, you're not going to quit now. But it's also not something that many people are going to enter into new ones easily. We're a high cost market to enter. And if you save up that money, you can probably open a restaurant more easily or a tavern somewhere else more easily if that's your dream.
Hmm.
And that's a tough one to overcome. And they are neighborhood gathering spots. It's their eyes on the street late night, their eyes on the street in the middle of the day. Some of them take packages for their neighbors because they know good neighbors are good business. It's just a tough time. It's going to continue to be a tough time, but they love the business. Otherwise, you wouldn't go into it. Nobody opens a tavern in Chicago because they don't like Chicago.
That's absolutely true. Are there any glimmers of hope, anything when it comes to maybe a positive outlook on this, trying to keep the taverns that we have, keep those open, and try to preserve this going forward?
You know, when we got down to about 900, I kind of thought we'd stabilized. And that was right before coming out of the pandemic. I didn't expect to see a 10% drop since most of the more COVID restrictions were lowered. So I got to be honest, I don't know. There'll always be some. What neighborhoods they'll be in and how many there will be is an open question. I'm definitely less optimistic than when we've spoken in the past on your great taverns around the city segments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking back to that, and I guess we have to have a little bit of hope here to keep this spirit alive. But recently, a friend of this show, Ted McClelland, he's been on a bunch. He writes for Chicago Magazine. He wrote an article where basically he was saying, or posing the question, is this the end of the neighborhood tavern? Do we have a definitive answer, or are you leaning one way or the other with that question in mind?
Some Chicago taverns will abide, as the dude says, because there are places where people can gather to celebrate, commiserate, congregate. And people still want a personal connection sometimes. Will as many survive? I'm not as confident as I was before, but yes, we'll always have some. People need that place to get together when to celebrate the good times and the bad times.
So, okay, I'll take that as a little bit of optimistic attitude here from you, Mr. Chicago Bars. I need anything I can get. I'm just holding on to anything right now. When we think about the current administration, the Johnson administration, have they given any sort of indication about, you know, priorities when it comes to preserving places like this or just hospitality in general? Do we see any trends? I know it's still relatively early in the mayor's administration, but what are we seeing so far?
I don't know. Not much. And I don't mean that as a knock. I mean, he took over. It's going to be tough. The federal COVID money's running out. It wasn't clear he was going to win the runoff, so you couldn't start putting a cabinet in place until after he won. And the budget's going to be tough. And so I haven't seen any plans. to reinvigorate tourism or local communities, neighborhood supports. I mean, no 77 taverns and 77 Chicago neighborhoods initiative. But I'm being very fair, he's got a really tough job and it's really in the early days. So let's see if we get through the next couple weeks and if there's any ideas to get cooking for the winter and for next year. And another big interesting issue is next year we have the Democratic National Convention. That'll bring a lot of people to town for a week and get us a national showcase, kind of like the NASCAR race for the city. It'd be great to see if they're leaning into getting us more tourism year round, because tourists downtown are happy bartenders and servers from downtown in their neighborhood spots. So that's some trickle down economics I do believe in. So let's hope.
Let's hope. And I like the idea of 77 taverns and 77 neighborhoods. I mean, that's great. Can we just go ahead with that? I mean, that's a great plan.
I'm here to help, but we'll need a wheel, man.
All right. Well, you heard it here first. We'll get this initiative rolling. Mr. Chicago Bars is the proprietor of the @ChicagoBars Twitter X handle. It's a great follow online and lots of great information that you post up there, sir. I always appreciate your time, your insights into what's going on here with bars, taverns, and hospitality in Chicago. And we'll do it again soon.
All right, my pleasure. Anytime, in person in a local tavern or on the phone, I'm your huckleberry.
Some Chicago history. In 1967, the Common Pantry, which is a local nonprofit food pantry, opened its doors in order to combat hunger and food insecurity on the north side of the city. It is the oldest continuously operating food pantry in Chicago. And last week, Common Pantry opened a new building at 3908 North Lincoln Avenue in order to provide emergency food and other vital services to those in need. Margaret O'Connor is the executive director of the Common Pantry. Check them out online, commonpantry.org. And Margaret is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
And I know this is a pretty exciting time for you right now. So first of all, let's talk about the Common Pantry. So this work has been going on for 56 years. So definitely an established Chicago institution. And this isn't just a food pantry in the traditional sense. You have an array of other important services as well. Can you tell us just briefly, what are some other things that you do at the Common Pantry?
Yeah, we sure do. We have a menu of services that we provide above and beyond the emergency food assistance. A decade or so ago, they established a Common Community Social Service program here. Common Community is really, you know, like you said, it's there to address the root causes of food insecurity. So we have a licensed clinical social worker on staff who uses her skill to help people do all kinds of things, whether it is applying for government benefits, doing housing searches, mental health referrals. We bring in flu vaccinations and other partners that can help people create some sustainability. For example, in housing sustainability, what keeps people housed? Having a security deposit or, a first month's rent, having furniture after you get a permanent home. And we have a partnership with Chicago Furniture Bank where we literally shop with folks. There was a woman here yesterday who took a virtual shopping tour with Chicago Furniture Bank, where we then purchased and arranged for the moving costs for her to get those resources. So she has a bed and a chair and things that really make it more feasible to live every day. And just an example of partnerships that we have that aren't really food related, but that we make sure that we process for folks and allow them a little bit more sustainability in that is one example of many that that particular program provides. And so it's really important.
Yeah. And, you know, you saying all that, I mean, I think what strikes me is that how all of this is connected. I mean, we talk about food insecurity, but this is also connected to poverty, to housing. And so, you know, in addition to doing the work of providing food for folks, I mean, there's much more to do. It's not just a food pantry. There's nothing wrong with being a food pantry, but if you're really looking at the holistic picture here, there's a lot of connections that you can make.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, and I hate to keep going back to people who are housing insecure, but we have a hot lunch, and our hot lunch program has a fairly large percentage of folks who are housing insecure, and we're able to utilize our address so that they can establish an address, and in doing so, you're able to apply for vital records and get them and receive them. And when you have a vital record like an ID, you're able to, you know, apply for a job or make sure that you can go down and get, you know, apply for CHA housing or, you know, just the things that you don't think about when you consider what it takes to be on the record for things. And people who don't have a permanent address are in need of that. So that's one, you know, that's one area where people are really surprised that that's something that we do. And, that's during our hot lunch. And our hot lunch program is really, really important because it can sometimes be the only hot, nutritious meal that somebody's going to get all day long. So that's like an opportunity where you're feeding someone, but then you have them in your space and you're able to connect with them in ways that is, you know, that is non-judgmental, that's dignified, and they trust. And when people trust, they tend to open themselves up for opportunity for sustainability. And we talk about that a lot. Trust, dignified experiences in a welcoming place. And I hate to kind of pivot over to the new building, but that's really what we have here. You know, we went from a basement of a church for 36 years to a light-filled, ADA accessible, really efficient and beautiful, beautiful space on a commercial strip that is really inviting, and it allows people to, you know, just to come here and get the services that they need. And it's important. It's an important aspect.
It's really exciting, this new building that Common Pantry has. And, you know, just thinking about all of the services that you provide, this is something to think about, that really all of us, you know, who knows what the future holds, and we could be in need of those services. I think there's a stigma sometimes around folks who go to a food pantry, but in reality, and I've talked about this before on this show, I mean, all of us are kind of one, you know, losing your job, events, or something away from possibly needing these services. So this is a very, in terms of like how far you reach, this is very much a wide-ranging organization.
For sure. I mean, you talk about the poverty cliff. I had one woman when I first started this job 5.5 years ago, not at this space, but the old space. And she came in and she brought a donation and she put it down, and it was right in the middle of, like, you know, a lot of flurry of activity. And so I just said, hey, what brought you here? Thanks so much. And she said, well, about 5 years ago, my husband died and my son and I really didn't have anything to eat. And we came here. And so whenever I can, I drop off food now. And so that's an example of, and I this is the first time I've ever gotten to that story without, you know, breaking down, because it was so powerful. And yeah, that's an example of where, you know, you just don't know people's circumstances. And so, as you said, the destigmatizing of food insecurity, it can be a bitter pill to swallow. And we want to welcome people who we don't want people going back further into debt or getting themselves in a credit crisis because they're using credit to buy food, right? Like, that's what I'm talking about. And that's really common.
So the demand for what you do, I mean, last year, Common Pantry served over 7,000 families from all over Chicago. Are you on pace to hit that number again or even surpass it this year?
Yeah, we are. We're keep the 35-45% higher than last year, almost every month. So how do we, you know, how do you really wrap your head around those numbers, but we're doing it, and we're doing it with dignity. And we're even in this new space able to provide people an opportunity to walk around the space with a cart and put the stuff in their cart, that it's like a grocery store. So it's really dignified. And we are lucky to be able, because of the support of a lot of people who might be listening, like your listeners, to extend the dollar further and purchase food at a lower price, and be able to purchase fish, purchase these things that people want to feed their families. They just don't have access to it. So we're in a position to move the needle on nutrition, and that's really important when you talk about the ecosystem of health. We're really excited about it.
There is so much going on, so many good things from the Common Pantry, and we should all check out the website, commonpantry.org. That is the site for the Common Pantry, and Margaret O'Connor is the executive director of that organization since 1967. So doing this work for 56 years, the oldest continuously operating food pantry in Chicago, and doing so much more. Hey, Margaret, congratulations on all of this success. You're doing this incredibly important work. Keep doing what you're doing. And I hope the new building up on Lincoln, Irving, and Damon, I hope that's working out wonderfully. And I'm really excited to see what you do next.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, a selfish plug for our event on Friday, October 13th. It's the 12th annual I Am Your Neighbor Party, right at Artifact Events, and you can go buy tickets. We're closing in the gap of sponsorship, so if there's any business out there that wants to support us, please look at the website and reach out to me. I would love to pack this room and use this as an opportunity on October 13th to really celebrate the successes of this last year. It's been a lot, but we're really, really thankful to the community.
And let's chat about some local music this week from Ron Lazzaretti. He is a local musician, and his new album comes out next Friday. It's called Fathead Sunday Paper. We should check out RonLazzarettiMusic.com. He is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. So your tunes, let's talk about your music. This is a very exciting time with this new album coming out next week. You've got a record release show also next week. We will talk about that. Your music, it's kind of like this mix of Americana, some acoustic in there, a little bit of rock. That's kind of what I'm getting from it. How do you describe what you do?
Yeah, I always have a hard time with that when someone asks, what is it? I mean, I think people all run to the Americana label because it just seems like the place for misfit songs. So, I think there's stuff, obviously, one who's kind of been like I have, is into Bob Dylan and people like that, who, Bob Dylan started out a folky, and I don't think he ever saw himself that way, and then went on to be something and then played the range. So yeah. I just feel like I play to my taste, I feel open to whatever sounds are available, but I lean pretty heavily in the areas you're citing.
Yeah, and Dylan, I mean, he went electric eventually.
Right.
And,
right.
So I think there is that evolution there. And I know that you have also kind of run the gamut when it comes to playing music. You've done more of the singer-songwriter kind of thing and then more of the rock and roll thing. But, I mean, it's really all connected. That singer-songwriter sort of nucleus, I think, is really important. And you have been playing with other singer-songwriters for decades in Chicago, haven't you?
Yeah, and a lot of that, of course, influences what you're doing. And the band that I play, that plays on this record, also played on the last record I made, and they're great. And aside from being excellent players, you know, they bring something to the party too, where all of a sudden you start hearing things a different way. They're very much, they're collaborative in that sense. And they play the music, they play the songs. They don't, it's not five solos, one after the other. And so I think, you know, a lot of my leanings kind of are, that helps too, to have the influences of the people that you play with.
Yeah. The album is really great. The musicians, everyone on the record sounds wonderful. And the new album, again, it's coming out next Friday by Ron Lazzaretti, is called Fathead Sunday Paper. So let's talk about this new record here, Ron. What were you setting out to do here? Tell us about the new album.
Well, I like an album, and you know, I don't know if that's, it's not a lost art, and LPs are making what people would call a little bit of a comeback, but I like a record, you know, that kind of all hangs together as opposed to a pile of songs. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what we always set out to do, is have something without sounding, you know, pretentious about it. It's in the back of our mind always, is having an arc to the thing.
Apollo astronauts and birdies, the losing fight at TKO, that baseball player with the movie star, host of that late night TV show, moon of Mancora after midnight, the night wind whispered.
Hey, this is exciting. You're playing next Saturday, September 30th, the record release show at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn. I mean, one of the best roadhouse venues you can find, 6615 Roosevelt Road in Berwyn. And this is a show, what, 8:30? Is that what time you go on?
Yeah.
So yeah. 8:30 at Fitzgerald's. Tell us about the show coming up.
Well, we'll be playing with the band that I was telling you about, and some other friends and musicians from that community. I mean, I kind of have to say that, aside from just being a great music venue, that place is a music community. And there's another place down the street from there. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the neighborhood, but there's friendly community, friendly music community.
Oh, Friendly Tap. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
sure.
And Rob Pierce, he runs that place. Will Duncan runs things over at Fitzgerald. It's really a cool, you know, there's a total sense of community about all of it. So I'm looking forward to this too, because it's kind of festive for not just myself, but other people who kind of play on these things, and we'll be able to kind of, you know, it's not a party, but I think we'll treat it a little more like a party than a show like we normally do. We'll have a kind of an oversized band for my stuff. Cause you know, when you play over there, you can play on, I do a songwriter circle once a month. We do things that are kind of more downsized. But this time I think we'll just kind of take, we're going to play the record straight through for the first set. And then the second set will be some old stuff of mine and just some artists and music that we like and just have fun with.
That sounds like a great time. It's coming up at Fitzgerald's. That's Saturday, September 30th. Fitzgerald's is located at 6615 Roosevelt Road in Berwyn. And you know, Ron, it's great because you can catch a show at Fitzgerald's and then you can absolutely slide on down Roosevelt to the Friendly Tap, and there's going to be some band playing there. So it is a really cool sort of music community in that stretch of Berwyn on Roosevelt.
Oh yeah. And there's also kind of on the fringe of that, a place called Out of Space. That's a kind of an art gallery and a music venue combined and a bar. So that may be, you know, that whole area is, I feel like people don't know what's available there. It's a little out of the way for sure, but there's some great, great stuff going on there.
It's worth checking out. Now, are you going to be playing the sidebar at Fitzgerald's?
Yeah. They kind of blew the walls out of that place.
Yeah.
What used to be kind of a smaller room, now it's kind of a bigger room, a long throw.
It's a great room and a great sound and great drinks. Those bartenders know what they're doing
They're pros.
They are pros. They've been there for a while. But this is really exciting, and the music sounds great. So the record is called Fathead Sunday Paper. It's coming up next Friday, is released next Friday. And we can go to your website, ronlazarettimusic.com, L-A-Z-Z-E-R-E-T-T-I, ronlazarettimusic.com. And of course,
it's too hard for spelling it.
I've done this before, Ron. I know how this goes. We should all go to Berwyn and Fitzgerald's next Saturday. That is September 30th for the big record release show from Ron Lazaretti. It's going to be a fantastic night. Hey, Ron, congratulations on all of your success. This is exciting, your new record. It sounds wonderful. And have fun at the party, you know, party/show at Fitzgerald's on Saturday.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate it.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 884 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. You're the best. So is Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering help in the WGN radio studio today. Have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.